Tonight, the president's message to the world, touching down in Brussels for a NATO summit, the new agreements to battle cyber terrorists, and what the president says he agrees with Vladimir Putin on.
That's potentially a good sign in progress.
Their meeting just days away. Our Andrea Mitchell one-on-one with the Secretary of State for a preview. Royal visit. The Queen of England welcomes the President and First Lady with a military salute, the invitation he extended to her. Historic change. Benjamin Netanyahu officially voted out after 12 years as Prime Minister. What Israel's new leader says about relations with the U.S. Record-breaking temperatures scorching the West, topping 100 in Idaho and Utah. The extreme drought in nearly half the country is about to get worse. The major legal ruling that an employer can require its workers to get vaccinated. Will more companies follow? Gridlock, how the surge in online deliveries is leading to massive traffic jams across the U.S.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. America is back at the table. Those are the words of President Biden today as he and other world leaders wrapped up a very friendly G7 summit. Late today, Mr. Biden touched down in Brussels for the next leg of his European trip, a NATO summit. And this Wednesday, he sits down for his first meeting as president with Russian leader Vladimir Putin, the two already engaging in a back and forth. The president and first lady also received by the Queen today. More on the pageantry and conversation in a moment. But we start off with Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell.
A very royal farewell to England as the Bidens of the White House and Delaware were received by Her Majesty the Queen at Windsor Castle. As England's longest-serving monarch hosted her 13th U.S. president, Biden in his signature aviators, the two chatting about world leaders, including his upcoming summit with Vladimir Putin. The Russian leader almost upstaging today's G7 finale by proposing to turn over Russian cyber hackers to the U.S. if President Biden would do the same.
So are you open to that kind of a trade with Vladimir Putin?
Yes, I'm open to if there's crimes committed against Russia, that in fact are the people committing those crimes being harbored in the United States, I'm committed to holding them accountable. I think that's potentially a good sign and progress.
Still, U.S. officials say they're not sure whether Putin wants to make progress at Wednesday's meeting or be disruptive.
Putin told my colleague Keir Simmons that the U.S.-Russia relationship is the worst it's ever been. Who's responsible for that?
That's probably an accurate description. And again, from our perspective, clearly, the reckless and aggressive actions that Russia has taken consistently are responsible. But we're also prepared to have and would prefer to have a more stable and predictable relationship.
At the G7, the president hailing that America is back after 4 years when President Trump often dismissed the allies, but Biden failing to get the other leaders to adopt his tough talk about China's abusive trade and labor practices.
As I've told Xi Jinping myself, I'm not looking for conflict. Where we cooperate, we'll cooperate, and we are going to respond to actions that are inconsistent.
Tonight, the president arriving in Brussels for a NATO summit tomorrow. Mr. Biden saying today,
we do not view NATO as a sort of a protection racket. We believe that NATO is vital to our ability to maintain American security.
And Andrea joins me from Brussels, the site of that NATO summit. The comment we just heard from the president sounded like a swipe at his predecessor.
Exactly. Nothing but. NATO, of course, is an alliance that former President Trump threatened to quit. He called it obsolete. President Biden, instead, thinks that it's critical to his efforts to stand up to Russia's aggression. Kate.
All right. Andrea Mitchell, thank you so much. And a reminder, Keir Simmons' exclusive interview with Vladimir Putin airs tomorrow morning on Today. Now to more on President Biden's visit with the Queen today. He became the 13th U.S. president to have an audience with Queen Elizabeth. It came with all the pageantry you'd expect and all the rules and royal protocols to be followed. Sarah Harmon is in Windsor with more.
It was pomp and circumstance as only the Brits can do. A royal salute from the Queen's Guard of Honor, followed by the Star-Spangled Banner. President Biden slowing his steps to avoid walking in front of Her Majesty, a breach of protocol President Trump was criticized for in 2018. After a private tea behind closed doors, Biden telling NBC's Peter Alexander,
"She reminded me of my mother."
Did you invite her to the White House?
Yes.
The president marveling at the size of Windsor Castle.
I said, "This is, we can fit the White House in the courtyard."
It wasn't the first royal meeting of the trip, the first lady taking on several independent engagements on the sidelines of the G7, including visiting a school with Kate, the Duchess of Cambridge, and highlighting the importance of early childhood education.
She's already established good personal relations with Boris Johnson and Carrie Symons. And of course, in a sense, it's the most difficult job because for any of the wives, because she is the first lady of the most powerful country in the G7.
Tonight, a united front between America's first family and Britain's royal family as Biden completes a presidential rite of passage.
It's unlikely the Queen will accept Biden's invitation to visit the White House. At 95, she no longer travels abroad. The world's leaders come to her. However, it is possible we'll see the Bidens return to the UK, perhaps even for an official state visit.
History is being made in Israel tonight. Longtime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been ousted from power. Kelly Kobiea now on what it could mean for peace in the region and long-term relations with the U.S.
After 12 years and three U.S. presidents, Benjamin Netanyahu, known as a political magician, is out of tricks tonight. Pushed out in a dramatic, razor-thin vote by an unlikely team of rivals from the right, center, and left, joined for the first time by an Arab Islamist party. It comes 5 weeks into a fragile ceasefire with Hamas. Tensions are still high. Palestinians under occupation for decades are fighting for their homes and demanding freedom.
What the hell is going on? Is really, it's still, we are in 2021, and still there is this injustice happening, and supported by so many official entities, which is the USA, for an example.
The new prime minister, right-wing politician Naftali Bennett, 49 years old, the son of immigrants from San Francisco, a former commando and tech millionaire who's against a Palestinian state. Tonight, thanking President Biden for supporting Israel and vowing to work with both Republicans and Democrats.
Israel is the most important partner in the U.S. in this part of the world.
On the street tonight, celebrations from those who believed Netanyahu was only holding on to power to get out of legal trouble.
And Kelly joins me now from Tel Aviv. Kelly, Netanyahu not leaving public life.
That's right, Kate. He's still a member of parliament, has no plans to retire. He's repeatedly called this government dangerous and a fraud, and today vowed to bring it down. Kate?
Kelly Kobiea in Israel for us. Back here in the U.S., dangerous triple-digit temperatures are baking the West. The heat wave and record drought are threatening food supplies. And now in some areas, even the power grid is in jeopardy. Von Hilliard reports from Los Angeles.
Tonight, record-breaking heat and a lack of rainfall are threatening to paralyze the country's western half. There's Phoenix, set to blister its records. But the high heat will reach beyond the desert this week. Billings, Montana, forecasting 104 degrees. Casper, Wyoming, 102. Salt Lake City, 103. Grand Junction, 106. As parts of California hit triple digits, the heat could be felt in the kitchen as farmers suffer to produce.
If we don't have enough water and we don't have enough feed for these cows, the tough decisions are coming for all of us.
But there is no rain on the calendar, punishing the already dry, parched land.
This year is the worst drought, the worst year since 1977.
88% of it now in a drought, raising fears of widespread wildfires. Flames already burning in Utah, prompting the governor to ask his state to pray for water from the skies.
We need it now. We need some divine intervention.
The thirst for water evident at Lake Mead, at its lowest point since 1937. And in the Nevada mountains, even bighorn sheep are desperate.
We did see some mortalities on the mountains. Those mortalities were where they would normally find water, and there wasn't any.
Tucson is moving its outdoor COVID vaccination sites indoors as cities brace for earlier, hotter summers.
Definitely in the future and decades to come, we'll see probably more intense heat events like this.
And there is heightened concern about the American West power supply. Last summer, 800,000 California homes lost electricity. Now the state's power grid operator warns it may be overstressed again. adding blackouts to the list of potential dangers this summer.
It's just scorching. How long is this heat wave expected to last, Vaughn?
Yeah, Kate, heat advisories are in effect through at least this Saturday here. Usually June's, they're cloudier, they're cooler, but this year, summer's coming early. Kate?
Just ahead tonight, the new ruling that makes COVID vaccines mandatory for some workers. Will your employer be next? We're back with a new controversial ruling about mandatory COVID vaccines in the workplace. A judge has ruled that one hospital is allowed to require them for its employees. The question now, could it happen at your job? Katie Beck reports.
High temperatures and turnout at a heated protest in Indianapolis Saturday. Healthcare workers fighting a new vaccine mandate from IU Health System, which says by September, all employees must get a COVID vaccination or face termination.
If you get the vaccine, why should I have to? Why should I be made and be threatened my livelihood if the vaccine works for you?
This weekend, a federal judge settling a challenge in Houston, where over 100 employees of Houston Methodist Hospital sued their employer over a similar mandate.
We're just basically fighting for everybody to have their free choice of what they do.
The judge striking down claims that employees face coercion to take the vaccine in a right-to-work state, stating in her ruling, Methodist is trying to do their business of saving lives without giving them the COVID-19 virus. It's a choice made to keep staff, patients, and their families safer. The mandate challenge, not the first and likely not the last, to a quickly growing list of hospitals making vaccines a condition of employment. New York Presbyterian Hospital System announcing their mandate Friday.
Some of these people were expressing that, you know, that they should have the right to choose. They should have the right to make these choices themselves.
They're right. As individuals, everybody has the right to choose anything that enters their body. But when we enter the practice of medicine, we know that our health affects our patients' health.
Doctor and healthcare policy expert Kavita Patel says nearly all hospitals already require a host of vaccines to be on the job. Many even require a yearly flu shot.
This is high stakes, not just for liability, but for patients' peace of mind after this harrowing pandemic.
High stakes for companies, too. Investment bank Goldman Sachs now asking employees to report their vaccine status. As in-person work life returns, more struggles ahead on who should call the shots when it comes to vaccines. Katie Beck, NBC News.
Still to come, the surprising connection between online shopping and the growing traffic jams across the country. Plus, team spirit, why all these families were exercising together all across the country. We're following some breaking news out of China. A deadly gas explosion at a produce market is under investigation. It happened today in central China, killing at least 12 people. You can see just how widespread the damage is. Tonight, rescue workers are on site looking for survivors under the rubble. Tonight, we're kicking off a series of reports across NBC News about infrastructure, and we're starting with traffic. Have you noticed it getting worse? Well, there's a surprising reason. It's because we're all doing a lot more online shopping. Steve Patterson explains.
After a year of largely untraveled freeways, Americans are hitting the road and finding a new source of congestion, delivery trucks. Experts say it's due to a surge in online ordering during the pandemic, and companies like Amazon adding more trucks for even faster delivery. A recent survey found that nationwide, over the course of 2020, total deliveries rose by almost 28%. Groceries in particular jumped by a staggering 103%. If you've driven in a city recently, you've seen it.
This FedEx truck double parked. FedEx truck double parked, blocking traffic. This is the third truck that we've seen as we speak, a UPS truck double parked, blocking traffic. I can barely get around, and this is what drivers are dealing with.
And with more trucks out on the road, those in charge of local infrastructure have their work cut out for them.
We monitor traffic on a 24-hour basis.
Here in Los Angeles, a city synonymous with driving, we were shown the Regional Traffic Management Center for Caltrans.
Los Angeles and Long Beach ports carry 40% of the nation's imports. We have a lot of trucks. I mean, as trucks are more on the pavement, we do see wear and tear on the pavement.
And that has a price tag. By one estimate, bumpy roads cost California drivers $61 billion annually.
Our lifestyle of online ordering has made truck congestion a real problem, and it's made worse every time you click that same day or next day button, putting more pressure on companies to deliver packages faster, which obviously makes the roads more congested, and it really pounds infrastructure and highways just like this one.
And it's only going to get worse. According to projections from the World Economic Forum, delivery vehicles in the top 100 cities globally will rise 36% by 2030, increasing congestion by over 21% and adding an average of 11 minutes to your daily commute. For its part, FedEx told us in a statement their trucks are a critical link in accommodating rapid growth in e-commerce and meeting fast-changing consumer demands. Amazon and UPS weren't available for comment.
Do you think this is something that is going to be a measurable problem for Caltrans?
It's just a new way of doing commerce.
Ensuring our nation's roadways remain clear and resilient as we get back to normal. Steve Patterson, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Up next, the Inspiring Fitness Challenge, uniting families across the country. Finally, there's good news tonight about a month-long effort this June asking people across the country to get active and have fun to raise awareness and promote acceptance for people with disabilities.
2, 3, go!
On a sticky summer Saturday, little kids were racing, families walking together, tossing footballs, dancing from Chicago to Fargo,
we're moving and grooving
to San Diego. Hola. Even as far away as Mexico. Gigi's Playhouse, which runs Down Syndrome Achievement Centers nationwide, kicked off what they call an acceptance challenge for June.
Will you accept me?
It is time!
Nancy Gianni is the energetic founder.
Part of why you started Gigi's Playhouse is because of the girl next to you.
This girl me.
That's right, because of her.
That's my name on it.
That's your name on it.
Full disclosure, Nancy's also a friend of my family. My sister-in-law, Kira, works at Gigi's. We profiled the centers on Nightly News back in 2013. They offer free therapy, classes, career skills, and family support.
Will you move for acceptance?
Will you accept me?
But with all the work they've done, Nancy still sees ignorance and a lack of acceptance.
For 17 years, we've like given them all the tools. We've worked so hard, free programming, free everything to get them ready for the world. And then I feel like we throw them out there in a world that's not ready for them.
The acceptance challenge is a way to unite.
There is nothing like being together at a gathering where people are there because they choose to be there. They choose to say, I can and will accept you as you are. It's like, Kate, there's an energy about that.
Gigi, what would you say about the need for acceptance?
We have to be generous, be kind, and be accepting, and it'd be nice, not mean.
Can you say hi?
Hi!
After months of virtual classes during the pandemic, there was joy in just being together.
It is so heartwarming just to have everybody back together again.
I got you.
You know that it's okay. He's perfect.
Sending a message engraved on every medal the kids took home that day.
Be generous, be kind, be acceptable.
Their free virtual platform is called Gigi's at Home, created during COVID. It's still operating, and it is one of the silver linings. They now reach families in more than 50 countries. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. Lester Holt will be back with you tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, stay safe and have a great night.